the stats, the salt, the sanity. And every so often, they talk about sports, too.
Here is Eric Dorsch, Russ Ivanek, and Justin Marcus. This is Armchair Sports Talk.
No, you are not imagining things. It is another episode of Armchair Sports Talk. That's right. We found the time. We got the people together, and we are going to do an episode of this. Lots to talk. Football, football, football. Red Wings hockey back in play, and we're really excited about it. Team got off to a nice little start. And we're gonna get the opinion of Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus, see how he feels about it. But first and foremost, he is here today, Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus.
What's happening?
What up? What up?
I'd like to say that the Wings are 0-1 ever since I've mentioned that they haven't lost in regulation. So I feel like point. I put the curse on them by they haven't lost in regulation yet. Well, now they lost in regulation.
But they were like 3-0 before you said anything, so it's not entirely your fault.
We gotta reverse this. We're gonna beat Boston, and my fantasy team will suffer. So,
You know what? You gotta take a hit for what matters most, my friend. So that means you have to decide what matters most.
My fantasy hockey team,
probably.
It's easy.
Jay, before we get to the Lions, Michigan State, Red Wings, I want to talk about, since it's just you and I, so we can talk golf. LIV Golf, they had their press conference for or their panel for the Miami tournament coming up, and during it, Brooks Koepka and Phil Mickelson, they decided to have a little bit of fun with each other. Brooks making the comments to Phil that he probably wouldn't know this because he was never number one in the world, but that when you are number one in the world, they give you this little trophy at the end of the year, and that he has two of them. And, you know, a little cheers and jeers and all that. And Phil, to his credit, I love it, with the response of, you know, that's a really nice green shirt you're wearing. Do you have any green jackets by chance? Brooks, no, I don't, but I will. You know, he came back with, but I will. And my question to you is, yes, Brooks was number one in the world. He won two straight U.S. Opens, two straight PGAs. He had, arguably next to Tiger, one of the best 2 years in golf. He was just on top of the world. Phil Mickelson did it for 20 years consecutively, winning majors, being the number two player in the world. Arguably, if Tiger never comes around, Phil's the greatest golfer of our generation just by sheer numbers. When it's that like that, and I get Phil's dropped off a little bit, do you kind of look at Brooks Koepka and go, hey, you have no leg to stand on here. You're talking to a guy that's in the Hall of Fame and still playing.
Yeah, see, but Brooks has that douchebag mentality where, you know, he wasn't ready for the back and forth, but he carried himself fine. I mean, I think Phil won the argument with the green comment, the green jacket comment.
Yeah,
Brooks, like, first of all, hang on, before I answer your question, that looked 100% real to me. I can't stand things that are like scripted and fake, but Poulter and Neiman, who are sitting in between them, were like, Neiman grabbed his hat and was like hiding, and Ian Poulter was like, I don't know what to do with my hands. Like it was like legit tension. But Brooks is like a baby, like baby Groot. Like, you're not fully rooted and developed in this league. You are noticeable. You're a household name. But, like, you're not him. So for Brooks to act like he's, like, the douchebag approach of just, oh, well, I was number one. Yeah, like, cool. Burning stars get really, really bright, and then they fade away sometimes. Or all the times. When they get really hot and they go away. Like, Phil's been here for a minute. So Brooks needs to check that shit.
Is there I do have to ask you this, because, like, obviously we watch sports very closely. We see them chirping on the ice. We see them chirping on the field. And, you know, baseball, like catchers and umpires will all chirp. But to you, because it's not a contact sport, because it legitimately is a you against the course kind of thing, when two guys decide to have some fun and go back and forth like they do, or like the Brooks and Bryson stuff for years, because Tiger and Phil never talked. You never heard them say anything to each other. So it was never got that. Is there just something special to you about, like, I guess we'll call it golf chirping?
Yeah, because it's ego. That's all just ego. Like, Eric, the first time I ever, one, break 100, and two, beat you, I will be all up in your kitchen. Until then, I am just a young Padawan in the background trying to make sure he doesn't lose his clubs or balls every day. So, yeah, like, it's, but like, when it's on, it's going to be on. And when it's going to take me a while, but when I get there, so, like, that's the ego that comes with golf. So, like, all they're doing is satisfying their own ego by chirping at each other. But, like, they take that home with them. They think about that. They go, yeah, I'm gonna drive the screen because he didn't do it. I'm gonna, like,
yeah.
That stuff, they keep notes. on what happens.
And I think also for me, the reason it is like that is because you get Connor McDavid against Austin Matthews a couple times. You get LeBron against KD. You know, you got Brady and Manning playing against, or Mahomes and Josh Allen. You get these guys facing off against each other. There's no guarantee you're going to get Phil and Brooks in a round together. So this is kind of their way of going at it, because the odds of them actually playing together is very, when it matters, is very minimal. So this is kind of like their equivalent of it. You can see the rest of these guys talk because they're going to play each other. Yeah. So it is that very minimal thing, but when you see it, like you said, it almost is like, oh, this is real. They're not pretending to do this.
No, you can't script that. Yeah, you can't. Go, if you watch it again, Ian Poulter literally freezes. He's just like, oh, I don't know what to say between these two men.
Yeah, it was absolutely, absolutely amazing. But speaking of scripted, this is something I wish we could script, and that would be a Lions season that's enjoyable to watch. Lions are 1-5 on the year, falling 24-6 to the 5-2 Dallas Cowboys, who, oh, by the way, their starting quarterback hasn't played since week one and decided to return against us and had a nice, lovely 19-25 for 207 and a touchdown. Pollard and Elliott combined for 139 on the field together. CD Lamb, 4 catches, 70 yards. Now, Jay, the problem with this is the Lions, up until 2 weeks ago, had the number one offense in the NFL, was scoring on everyone, hasn't scored a touchdown in literally 8 quarters of football. A couple field goals. Jared Goff, 21-26, 228, 2 interceptions. He's having a hard time with that. Jamal Williams, 15 carries, 79 yards. Khalif Raymond, leading receiver, which tells you how depleted we are at receiver, 5 catches for 75 yards. And, you know, Jay, up until half, this was a game. These guys were in it. And then that second half hit, to be more specific, that fourth quarter hit, and these Lions just fell apart. It's like they couldn't hold on any longer to what they were doing, and it just, the floodgates opened.
Yeah, you know, it reminds me of the Wings last year when they had injuries and problems and they had no depth, they fell apart as well. They have depth this year, which is nice, but the Lions don't. Like, you can't afford to lose Amon-Ra St. Brown and Swift. Like, just straight up. Like, that, I think that's the math equation here. You lose those two guys, you lose that number one offense. And mind you, that was also carrying the worst defense of points allowed as well. So I feel like this is the result of a lack of depth. And I love Jamal Williams. I think he's great. He's not going to be a long-term solution for us. Mm-hmm. But, like, if Hawk was our featured dude and Hawk goes down, like, even Hawk going down on pass blocking, Jared Goff's probably getting sacked 5 times more a game. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the problem, that they are that paper thin at positions. We're 1-5. And Vegas is rolling in their money because they set the over-under at, like, 6.5, and they started bumping it to 7, 7.5, and – dude, I don't think we're going to win 4 games this year, 3 games. We might be drafting first overall again, or, you know, close to the top, but first overall this time. So it's bad.
Yeah, it's not great. I said it the other day. This is the first time in I don't know how long that I look at our schedule, and our division games are the games that scare me the least. Playing Green Bay, playing Chicago doesn't worry me anywhere near as much as some of these other games. So it's very weird. It's very odd. I agree with you. There's a lot of deficiencies. I think the issue is we've seen so much losing that we're so desperate for a winner that it's almost like an interim basis. Like, you have 2 years to figure this out. If you can't, we have to move on because we can't waste any more time. So people are getting very, very agitated because we see the product on the field. This team has the capability of being a unstoppable offense. The defense is suspect, but the last couple of weeks we've also seen the defense can play defense. They have the capability. So it's one of those things where it's just so hard to sit back, take a breath, and go, this wasn't going to happen overnight. They need some time. They need to have some time to adjust. We're injured. Your top players are not playing, and it's very hard to hold that mentality long enough to see the finished product. And what worries me is the right people aren't going to be able to hold that mentality long enough to see the finished product. I mean, Sheila Hamp came out the other day and said she's behind these two. She wants to see them be successful. But it's like, okay, well, the person that's making the decision is supportive. Can everybody else be supportive long enough for this to actually see and come to fruition?
Yeah, you know, and she said she was frustrated. It's like, yeah, but I'm pretty sure you still make money, like, hand over fist. you can't be that frustrated. Like, yeah, I can come up and say it sucks the Lions are 1-5, but I just cashed a $5 billion TV contract. Like, I don't know. I found that a little off-putting that she was complaining in a way, but it's like, look, for them, they probably just look at this as a profit, as money.
Yeah.
Like, and they, I mean, they care about the players, but like, the TV deal plays the players basically, and everything else is just fluff money for them. So, like, for me, I feel like this is a bad relationship for me. Like, the Lions are toxic for me, and they're not good, and I need to cut them out of my life because they give us one good thing, and you're like, yes, I love this person. And they do, and then they let us down, and we're like, well, we've been let down so many times. This is like normal. Mm-hmm. So, like, this is a bad relationship that we're in, and I need to be removed from it.
I get that. I really do. I completely understand that. It's very hard to – it's gotten to a point now where it almost feels like a chore to get yourself to turn the game on every week and sit through it. Like, knowing that it's the product, it might not be there, and knowing that, you know, we might see a game where they absolutely show up and lose at the last second. You know, I tweeted out during the game the other day, I'm starting to question if Dan Campbell knows all the rules of the game he's coaching, because he missed on two potential challenges that would have affected the game. You know, I'm happy he didn't decide to go for fourth down every time. Like he actually made some smart decisions, but you know, he also just never seems to, like, when you need the coach to step up and kind of have those words of wisdom or maybe get in a guy's face, he doesn't really seem like he does that. He kind of seems like he just stands there and stares at you like, I'm scary enough that you should be afraid of me even looking at you. And it's like, that's not going to work. Some guys need an actual, like, kick in the ass, and you have to give them that. So it's a very weird thing. The only thing I will say is I think these guys genuinely want to play for him. And that's a good thing. They're 1-5. They're still playing hard. Guys want to be out there. And I think that's a product of that. They really do like Dan Campbell and Aaron Glenn and Brad Holmes, and they want to be here when these guys figure it out. So that is an upside. The day we see them start questioning him is the day we have to go, okay, something has to change here. Like, kind of like Darius Slay and Matt Patricia. He did not want to be here and didn't like being here, and he made it known. And that's when it's over for a head coach.
Yeah, because there's got to be some players that, like, want the bright future, but, like, the paycheck is still good, and the environment is great, and the people you're surrounded with are great. And that's enough for some people to continue to perform with the hopes of it becoming something bigger.
Absolutely.
I don't know, man. People here have very, very short fuses when it comes to this kind of stuff. And, like, you called it a chore. I got more out of hanging my new dining room chandelier while watching the Dallas game than watching the Dallas game. I was like, oh, yes, I did this right. And I'm looking down, I'm like, oh, you just fumbled. Good job, Jamal. And I was like,
well, and how much does it hurt? The first time the guy ever fumbles in an NFL game is when we needed it the most. So it's just very tough. This is a week that when I was looking forward to, like, when I was looking at it and trying to kind of get my words together for what I wanted to say, I was like, this might be the week where I don't think Justin gets upset at all, because we're playing the Miami Dolphins. We're playing the guy who you would sign tomorrow as our starting quarterback if you could. Tua Tagovailoa, he will be playing. His brain is officially somewhat healed from the just massacre of the few weeks he had. To give you the quick overview, like we always do, Miami is a 65.4% favorite in this game. The line is only 3.5, which I'm very, very surprised about. I expected it to be a lot more for the fact that this is a 4-3 against a 1-5. Over under is 51.5. Jay, this Miami Dolphins offense has the potential to score on any play. You got Tariq Hill. You got a lot of talent in that backfield with Edmonds. The fact that it's only 3.5 means that whoever's making these lines thinks the Lions offense is going to be just as ready to go and just as firing. So when you look at this, where are you taking in this Miami Lions game?
I mean, to bet on it, I'm taking the over. I think between Hill and Waddle, and then Amon-Ra St. Brown and whatever else pops up for the Lions that day, I see a lot of scoring. This is yet again another week in a row that we have a quarterback coming off of injury against us. Like, that's who they picked. Like, yeah, Detroit, let's do that. I've also got two on my fantasy team, so but no one gives a fuck about that.
No one gives a fuck.
We're not winning. I don't like, we don't have the ability to take the top off of a game like Tua does. Like mm-hmm. we don't like we have Amon Ross St. Brown. That's great. But like they have a Jalen Waddle. Like Hockenson has one touchdown on the year, maybe two, I think, on the year. And there's days where he's just pass block and there's days that he's featured. But that's primarily when St. Brown wasn't there. And Swift, I think, is still TBD as well. So like I feel like we're going to be one dimensional. We're going to be very predictable. Goff will throw the ball far, but like we'll take some shots at St. Brown. But we're not going to open up this game to cover a 3-point spread and win. So I don't know, man. It's Miami. It's going to be any team that we play until the Lions show that they can do it consistently. Because, like, look back at that Washington game. Okay, Washington blows. Like, Carson Wentz is dead. Jahan Dotson is dead. Like, I don't know, man. There's not a lot of respect going their way. That's all I know. So give me Tua and Dolphins. Give me the 3 points. Or I'll give the 3 points, rather, because I don't see them – beating them, but at least we'll have some scoring. It'll be fun while I pick another chore in my house to watch.
No, I agree. This is one of those ones that, you know, I don't see it being a high scoring game. I see both teams just firing out. So I agree with you in that regard. I think that Tua and Waddle and Hill, that's just too much to overcome. The numbers don't stack up the way it should. So I think this is a Miami win. Lions fall to 1-6. It makes it tough. And as long as it's not a heartbreaker, I can live with a 10-point loss where they played all the way through. It's just the other team was too much better. It's those ones where we drive it all the way down the field and we lose on a last-second knocked, like tipped ball or something. Those are the ones that I can't really get past as easily. So I can live with the rest because it means we just don't have the talent in place to stay with them. And that's not X's and O's. That's just the need to build the team, which that's so something we got to do.
We're having flashbacks of Jim Schwartz and a challenge flag and Caldwell counting to 11. And yeah, those are the things. Those are the deficiencies that just you literally are like, I don't want to listen to any sports radio for 5 freaking days because I know what's sell the team. The Ford's got to go. Like fire the coach midseason. Like that's the shit on Sunday. It ruins the rest of your week.
It really does. These are two questions. And these are two questions that I think are very, very crucial at this point. Uh-oh. Before we get to Michigan State. One.
No, I don't want a wig. I do not want a wig. Fine. I want to be bald.
That's fine. One, we talked about how, you know, Tua and the talent and all that. Are you at a point now where you're not even looking at any other position? You're just eyeing who's going to be available at quarterback next year?
I mean, yeah, we have 2 picks in the first right now. What is it? We're like one, or we're probably going to be first, and then probably like 18th, 19th with the Rams.
Yeah, the Rams can't really get it figured out either. So,
I mean, as of right now, if we're doing a mock draft all the way to next year, it's got to be quarterback and then linebacker. Grab the best linebacker, grab the best quarterback, and then I guess as of for need right now, yeah, because Goff, I don't know. I'm not sold on him, man. I'm not. Maybe Russell Wilson will want to go to another team and, you know, Detroit country, let's ride. I mean, like any possibility is open. So it's really quarterback is problem number one for this team.
I mean, the way you got to look at it right now, the Rams are in second place in their division at 3-3, with San Francisco and Arizona both 3-4. And Seattle 4-3. So that division's up for anyone. Anyone could take that at this point. Lions obviously are last in the division at 1-5. Chicago's 3-4. So I was one of those people and I still maintain it to an extent. And I have to say, I think injuries is one thing. You got to look back at injuries and understand what's going on. But I still think Jared Goff could be the guy here. I'm not like, there's a reason that offense was number one in the NFL for 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, it worked.
There's
it worked.
A reason. Right. And that is execution of Jared Goff. He found the guy. He made it happen. Now, you see, it wasn't just Jared Goff. It wasn't like Matt Stafford, like, chucking it to whoever was open, and he throws it so hard that it's stuck to the guy. It was receivers making plays, running backs making plays. So it's a well-orchestrated machine. But as we know, every piece plays a part in that. And if you take Jared Goff out, I don't know that the machine rolls the same way. Vice versa, when we take St. Brown or Hawk or even Swift, who I would love to see play if he ever decides he wants to play football for this team this year. The guy was one of the He was supposed to be number. He was supposed to be one of the top backs in the NFL, and he just can't get on the field right.
We're not allowed to have a healthy running back. Just point blank, period. It's not for us.
And secondly, this one I want to ask more as you're one of those people that, you know, I know you'll give a straightforward, honest answer despite what everybody's going to want to see. Jameson Williams, drafted out of Alabama. It was said today he's a month away from playing football. He's got one more month. And it's an ouch, but we drafted him knowing this was a long-term investment on a game-breaking talent. But I ask you this. He's a month away, so he's going to miss at least another four football games, we'll say. If this team is 2-8 when he's ready to come back, do you bring him back? Or do you say, sorry, you can be rookie of the year next year?
So I'd have to find out what the qualifications are for rookie of the year.
If he doesn't play at all this year, he would be up for rookie of the year next year.
Right, but can he play like three games and then still qualify next year?
I don't know. But do you even want him playing? He's coming off a knee injury. Wouldn't you rather not risk it? He comes back in a losing season and, you know, his third week back, he snaps his other leg.
All right, so answer. If he is predetermined to have his leg just break into a bajillion pieces, I'd rather him do that before the draft. So if he's going to hurt himself, but predicated upon that he's ready to play now, if he's good to go now and he can run around that field and we can have two weapons out there at all times with Swift, show me. Like, I want to see it. I want to show, like, we have to prove now that we traded up for a wide receiver up into like the mid early rounds. We had a defensive tackle that we could have taken that's like killing it for the Eagles right now. His name escapes me. I can't forget. I can't remember his name.
I understand.
But like, if he's ready to go, take the snaps. Got to see it. Got to know what we're doing for the draft. I don't imagine we need to go wide out again. I'd rather go running back again if we're going to look at offensive weapons again. But I want to see what we bought, man. We bought something and we just tucked it to the side. It's time to bring it out. But if he needs another month, then I guess I got to be a little more patient.
Yeah, I'm one of those people. I really do yo-yo between like bring him back.
Him on the bench.
Well, partly for that reason, I don't want to risk him getting injured in a 3-14 season. If I think if we're in any form of contention that we could maybe play into a wild card spot, or maybe because our division is not the greatest, if Minnesota has a little bit of a skid and we could potentially win against, you know, Green Bay and against Chicago, and it's something, yes, I want him because he just makes that offense that much better.
Or as a decoy. Don't even throw him the ball. Or as a
decoy, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, but at the same time, I don't want to risk getting him back and him just getting absolutely slaughtered, because that makes it that much tougher when it doesn't happen.
But meanwhile, you got Brad Marchand coming back from hip surgery a month ahead of schedule tonight against the Wings. He's like, nah. We're hockey players, man. We're gonna go on the ice, and I'll probably break something and not even tell anybody, which is like lunacy. But like, I don't know, man. Injuries stacking up in the NFL are scary. Like, I know why I took a break from fantasy football, because it's exhausting keeping up with who's half dead. Like Jamar Chase, I just saw today. He's out, 4 to 5 weeks because of a bruised hip or some shit like that.
Yes, that sounds right.
People they get hurt left and right. So I can see your point of view of holding on to JMO and letting him be 100% before we expect him again. But like, look what Gus Edwards did. He came back and had 2 touchdowns after he was sidelined for a while. They didn't ease him in. They threw him right into the deep end. He survived. Yeah. So
Jordan Davis.
Yeah.
See, I was trying to find him.
We could have had six weeks of Jordan Davis, and maybe we're not the worst defense.
No, I agree. Yeah, it's a very tough question to answer because there's merit for either side. It makes sense to tell him, look, dude, get as healthy as you can get that fire burning so hard so next year we're ready to go.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's merit to, well, no, we want to see what you can do, because if you're what we think you are, we're going to go in a totally different direction draft-wise. If there's question marks, we know, okay, we need to address this in the offseason one way or another. So there's merit to either side. I'm not going to argue that whatsoever. It's just, it's a tough question to answer. Very easy question to ask.
But you then have the best damn doctor on payroll.
Yeah.
You're charging $57 per beer, and like $80 a slice of Little Caesars. Have the best doctor on payroll for that
answer. Absolutely. All right. Well, I know you don't want to talk about this, but we have to talk about it.
No, no. I'll look the devil in the eye. I know it's coming.
Devil in the eye. All right.
Well, 22.5 points.
22.5 points. Michigan 7-0. Michigan State 3-4. They meet this week. Michigan is a 90.2% favorite.
Oh, we don't like that number on this show.
You know how I feel. 90 is a trap. So it is what it is. Michigan is a 22.5 point favorite, as you said. I'm just doing simple math here, Jay. So don't shoot the messenger. The over/under is 55.
Yeah, this is where I got lost. I
think you're going to score a lot.
Yeah. So answer, like, can we start there from a gambling perspective and know that, like, the books adjust how they need to win. They're not in the business of losing, right? Mm-hmm. But, like, how is your cover half of the total where they set the line? Like, exactly. Now you're basically betting if State's going to score or not, which is insulting. So Jim Harbaugh is responsible. That's all I got to know. So,
yeah. Quick overview. J.J. McCarthy, 111 of 144 for just shy of 1,300 yards, 9 TDs to 2 interceptions. Peyton Thorne, 136 to 208 for literally a yard shy of 1,500 yards, 11 TDs to 7 interceptions. We've said it before. Your run game has struggled mightily this year. Yeah. Berger is your leading rusher, 80 carries, 367, and 5 touchdowns. Blake Corum, who's having, I don't think you'll argue, a Heisman caliber year, kind of like what Kenneth Walker did last year. 146 carries, 901, 13 touchdowns. Neither team really busting it in receiving, you know, Michigan partly because of the run game. Bell has 35 receptions for 429 and a touchdown. On the other side, Keon Coleman, 31 receptions, 393 and 5 touchdowns. Jay, look, it'd be easy to just pick the number. It's over. Let's call it. You know, you can do all those things. And I think a lot of people are doing that. But I will say this. There is a reason, and I think it's a stupid reason. There is a reason this is a night game. There is a reason this is a game they want everybody to see. It is because in the last decade, this has always been a game. Even if both teams are trash, one team is trash and the other one's phenomenal, both teams are phenomenal, this is always a game. Doesn't matter that you guys have a losing record. Doesn't matter that, you know, the team's a little off this year. There's some gaps that need to get filled. This is always a game. So for that reason, I understand why it's a night game. That being said, I'm saying this right now. Please forgive me. When it happens, cops, don't come find me because I knew nothing about it. Someone is going to die at this game. Because
player or fan? What are you talking about?
Fan, because this is a stupid idea to let Michigan and Michigan State fans spend 12 hours in Ann Arbor boozing for what could potentially be, as we both saw by that line, a 55-13 slamming. And
I don't want anyone
that's going to die.
I don't want anyone to die, but play stupid games, get stupid rewards. Like, don't just be a good human. Like, there's consequences. I don't want anyone to die, but you're probably right. It's night in Ann Arbor. That's going to be rough. Not as rough as I think the game's going to go. Okay.
Fire your shot.
I hate this. I hate it. This is not how I wanted my season to go. But granted, you hit the transfer portal as much as he did. You're trying to piecemeal with Berger and Broussard. This is sometimes what happens. So you are right that this game is more than just a game by record before it starts. And people get up for this. And when you know Ohio State's your next eventual opponent to get slaughtered, this is the end of the season. You had homecoming 2 weeks ago, and now the series finale is this Saturday in Ann Arbor at night. So I think there's going to be a point in time where this game is closer than people expected, and Vegas is sweating the fact – or no, they're winning because they put a 22.5 spread on a game, and the total is half of that. I'm going to put a little bit of money on Moneyline at plus 1,200 for State to win. And it doesn't make sense, and it doesn't have to, because it's a rivalry that doesn't make sense. In years that each other are up or down and we shock each other and shit happens. You guys should have won last. You guys had multiple chances to win last year, and you had fumbles, and you had Kenneth Walker take one to the house, and the game was over. So, like, it's going to stay close because everyone is on pins and needles. And I'm going to take Michigan State to win because – I'm gonna die with my team if we don't. That's literally my only factual reason. I have no numbers. Thank God Russ isn't here. He would grill me that I have no numbers, but I got no stats. I don't care who leads what in the Big Ten and who's got the worst this, that, and the other. Just give me my Spartans. Give me a glorious Saturday for me to rub it in your face that we did this. A 3-4 team did this, and you guys are just done. ESPN can't bump you up to 4 anymore. They can't. The committee, it just done. Just murdered. Call the cops. There's someone else getting killed. It's your season. Sorry, I got a little into it. My bad. You agree with me. Just say you agree and we'll go on to the next segment. I know that's what you want to say.
Yeah, we're going to talk Red Wings hockey next, so I can make this real fast. 40-14. This is too complete of a team. There are too many question marks on both sides of the ball for you guys. I said this to you multiple times, and I will say it again. I think the fact that you still have, I don't even remember his name now, it's gone, at quarterback tells me that coach knew.
Oh my God,
knew.
Peyton Thorne.
Yeah, tells me that coach knew this was not going to be a great year and he figured, why make any real changes? So, look, it's 40-14. Do I want it to be a close game? No, not at all. Do I think it has the makings to be because of how they framed it? Absolutely. But this is one of those years where I think Harbaugh is going to go, yeah, there's no letting them in this. Get out early. Let's get it going. We're going to run the heck out of the ball. So don't expect a lot of possessions. And if you do get the ball, you better score because you don't know when you're going to get it back again. So I say 40-14, Michigan. Michigan goes to 8-0. Friend of the show, Sean Bolegian, said it the other day. I'm not saying it. Now hear me do this. I am not saying this.
But you're saying it for him, so you are saying it.
No, I'm repeating what he said. I disagreed to an extent. He's a state fan too, so this is coming from a state fan. He believes at this exact moment, Michigan is the best team in the Big Ten. Now, take that for what it is. Ohio State is still a very talented football team. They got off to a rocky start. They have an offense that is great. They haven't gone up against too many, or their defense has not gone up against too many offenses that can, you know, that are like Michigan's. So it is what it is. I framed it another way. Michigan isn't the, it may not be the best team. They are the most complete team. They have a complete football team right now. Both sides of the football don't have a lot of gaps.
Well, okay. So how do I do this? You are accurate in what you are saying to a degree. And this is a different conversation, but like screw the non-conference games. Just make all these divisions and just have it be Big Ten versus Big Ten until it matters. Like, because it eliminates this. Because I don't care what you did about UConn and Hawaii and Little Sisters of the Poor and boasting up your record and you're the most complete team. And yeah, of course you can say that. You had some easy opponents. And Ohio State had a rough go with Oregon, I think, when they started the season.
They did.
And they've been choppy since. But that being said, like, these are the rules of the game. We have to play by them. You are undefeated. You are a complete team for now until you run into a juggernaut and your head gets chopped off and then life goes on.
I said it the exact way. For right now, we are the reigning Big Ten champs. So, yes, if you're going to rank a position, number one goes to us by that. That being said, I do not think that we will know the answer to that question until November, whatever it is, when they meet on that field and we see what happens. Because we both know it could be a 14-14 score going into overtime. That's happened. Mm-hmm. It could be 30-7 in the third quarter, one way or the other. We don't know till it happens. Right. And that's the mystery of the game. It's the same thing with Michigan State. This game could be over by the half and you're hanging chandeliers in your house because apparently your house needs chandeliers in it.
It's like a foot by 3 foot tiny, like Hampton Bay. Like, get
doesn't
out
matter.
Of here.
Doesn't matter. Everybody's picturing the big diamond chandeliers.
This ain't Gucci Couture. This ain't whatever. Name other high fashion shit.
You guys don't realize he even raised the ceilings in his home to hang these chandeliers.
Oh my God.
So
get lost. There's gonna be another murder right now.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with it. It'd be very interesting to see. You know, Jay and I will be talking trash all like the next couple days leading up to it. So it is what it is. All right, Jay, let's get to it. It's Red Wings hockey. It's back. We haven't done a show since they came back. Wings Wings got off to a really nice start, actually. They were kind of a decent hockey team to watch. They're currently 3-1-2. Like we said, Tizer. That third column doesn't count, so they're 3-1.
They're 3-1. Thank you. Yep. Hope you say that.
That third column doesn't exist. That's right, Russ. Screw you. They're 3-1.
Through bow ties and hockey ties.
Yep. After six games played, give you a little catch up here. Dominic Kubalik leads the team in points and goals, 10 points, 4 goals. Oh, he leads the team in assists too, with 6 assists. Dylan Larkin right behind him, 8 points, 4 goals, 4 assists. And then we have Perron with 4 goals as well. This is it's weird, Jay. This is the first thing I want to talk about because it's the first thing that came to me. It's weird to see this because I think the expectations got so high last year that Lucas Raymond doesn't have a goal.
Yeah. That's okay. That's okay.
No, it's not okay. He's on my fantasy team. But
that's okay.
Yeah. But he has not recorded a goal. And I think the expectations got so high last year that I was almost like looking at it the other day going, so when's he going to Grand Rapids? But it's not how it should be. But the expectations are so high. It's like, when are we kicking him in the butt, guys?
Yeah, I don't know. I think he's still on a two-way. I don't know if we can send him down to the minors without hitting waivers. But
yeah,
look, this is what happens when you take an input, an entire line, Perron and Kopp and oh boy, blanking. What's the other guy's name?
Who?
Second, Perron, Kopp, and Verana. Between two seasons, we picked up an entire line. So what that does effectively is it allows your young stars to sit back a little bit because you have a little bit more leaders in the room. Perron loves facilitating the puck, and Kopp loves getting into the dirty areas. So when you have a more balanced approach on the ice, Lucas Raymond isn't expected to, you know, dump the puck in or create the transition over the blue line or sustain the puck against the boards. Like, he can kind of float, and that's hockey luck. It sucks. Yeah, he's on the skid. He hasn't put up a point yet, but he'll get there because look at Kubalik. We also picked him up. He's the benefactor of everything right now. He just happens to be in the right spots. And again, we have that depth on the offensive side that we've lacked for so long. It allows them to be entertaining. Like, watch the game tonight and watch their zone entries into Boston's territory to go shoot on Swayman and watch them actually possess and move the puck correctly. It no longer are the days of just blind passes and just chipping it up the boards and hoping someone gets to it. And you got this line that is creating this momentum for them. There's got to be a cost of doing business. And I think that's Raymond because he's not on the board yet, but hockey has so much luck involved and he'll get there. But if we have to sacrifice Lucas Raymond for the better of the team, I'm here for it.
I know you are. You spoke about depth. Bert's out, Verana for reasons.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where it really does have that feeling. Like, in the years past, it would have been, crap, how long do we have to survive without these guys on the ice? Now it really does feel like next man up mentality, which is not something we've had in Detroit the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Giovanni Smith on the third line at times, I think, last year. And, like, he's a fourth liner at best. He brings energy. He fights. I love him. He forechecks. Yeah. But, like, we don't have to take people from GR and make them on our third line and have them be in a part of the middle six grouping of the team. It's not necessary this year. And I think that's done on purpose so that it's a better product and these youngsters can start learning what's happening. So it helps. But, like, okay, Bertuzzi, he's a core part of this team. Verana, we're trying to see that he's a core and his numbers back it up. He just hasn't been around forever to do it. Mm-hmm. But, like, the man's got some substance or a player. I forgot what it's called, but he's in a program to take care of his own shit, which is different outside of hockey. Mm-hmm. So it's different though. This is why I looked at this roster and I said, look, 84.5 points over on the season is an easy bet to lay. And I think they'll be in the 90s because they can do it with their team. It's no different than the Lions offense. You put it together, it works.
No, I completely agree with you. And that next man up mentality is, I think it's going to be it's going to be like how I told you guys with the eye test. It's going to be that thing that doesn't show up in the box score. But if they do it right, the box score will start being affected by it because it's not going to be a night where, okay, we're going in, it's against so-and-so, Larkin has to get two, we need Bert to, you know, to play physical. It can be a thing of, all right, Bert's out, okay, well, Raymond steps up, you've got, you know, Perron over here, you've got guys that can work their way in. I mean, let's be honest, can we talk about the fact that we've got a 6'8" guy named Soderblom who's just insane? He literally is tapping the stick down the ice with people in front of him, and he doesn't seem to care. It's phenomenal talent that Yzerman has found, and it's starting to work effectively where it needs to.
Yeah, Soderblom's nice. I've been riding Rasmussen's ass for so long, and I just need to come to terms that he's not who he's going to be. Kind of like Joey Valeno, same deal. Like when we had Tatar and Thomas Yurko, same deal. Like they were billed out as this amazing talent, but it didn't really come to fruition. Soderblom is making other people good on the ice.
Oh, absolutely.
The Rasmussen, Soderblom, and Sundqvist line that everyone talks about. Like, yeah, we're talking about it for a reason. Soderblom is huge and agile, which those two words don't normally go together.
No, it's a lot of fun to watch. There's an immense amount of talent there that makes things great. So, no, I completely agree with you. I am very much for it. I want to get to predictions for the next week like we do. But before I do, I asked this question to Sean Bolesian the other day, and I wanted to ask you because I want to see if the answer is kind of similar or not. They're off to a good start. I think it's still a little premature to get get ahead of ourselves. This is a playoff contending team. This is a cup contending team and all that. They just need a little bit of time. But I ask you, when it comes to time, how much of a sample size do you need of this team before you feel like you can actually make an opinionated decision on what they're going to be? How much time do you need?
To be honest, for me, it's by Halloween every year. You show me a month. I know what I'm looking at. Like, look at Vancouver. They haven't won a game yet. They're done. You can't come back from that in a month of October. I need a month. So you're going to show me Boston, Minnesota, and we're going to end eloquently with Buffalo because I think we're better than Buffalo. And we can take that third spot in the Atlantic or even have to fall in as a wild card. And based off what I'm seeing now, if we could beat Boston with Marchand coming back, Minnesota should be a breeze because Fleury's been trash lately. I know I'm doing the prediction now. Yeah. And Buffalo, I'm not worried about Buffalo. Tage Thompson is great. Cool. Jeff Skinner, you're like dead. So like, I know what I see. And by Buffalo game next on Monday, I'll be able to kind of forecast what I think this team's going to do.
That's
just
fair.
Just by a gut check.
That's completely fair. I understand. I went a little bit further. I said the quarter poll. Give me 20 games. By 20 games, I think we'll have a better understanding. Now, again, you're talking about 8 games. We'll have seen 8 games of an 82 game season.
10%.
A month, but that's the thing. You hear a month and it's like, oh, that's a lot. It's like, but it isn't. It's 8 games.
Yeah,
but what I'm saying is I think the quarter poll. Now, again, that's enough time. One, that's enough time to put up wins and losses and almost play yourself in or out, like you said, play yourself in or out of a season. But at the same time, it's that first month to me, especially with the team we have, is you're still 8, 10, 12 games. You're still tinkering. You're still saying, ooh, I like this line, but what if we move this guy here and bring this guy here? That's going to give us a lot of energy in that second line. Or I really like this defensive pairing, but these two don't seem to work as well. What if we switch these two? So you're still tinkering. By 20 games, if you're Derek Lalonde, you have to have everybody where they need to be, and everybody needs to know their assignment. And if by 20 games this team is doing what it's doing right now effectively, you're good. You know what you got, and you can win with it. You know how to win with it, and you can play with it. So for
me, stay healthy. Yeah.
So for me, it's the quarter poll, which would mean roughly around the end of November. We know what this looks like.
And what checks out for you on that is 8 out of the 13 games in November are played at home.
Yeah.
You're that crowd, that stadium. Can we talk about the fact that I don't see as many black seats as normal? Like,
people want to be there.
Eight out of the next 13 will be at home. I don't argue. Yours probably sounds more logical. Mine is rapid fire, but that's what I go for.
One of us has to be intelligent in this conversation. No. I'm with you though. A month sounds great, but what we don't realize is this isn't like baseball where we see 20 games in a month. You see,
right.
8 to 10 games, so it makes it a little tougher. And everybody has a different eye for it. Some people feel like, oh, I know what that person's going to be. I know what that person's going to be. It's just with so many new faces, it's very – I need a little more time to see everything come together before we say let's go. So,
right.
And that's fair. All right, so like I said, we're going to do predictions. Jake kind of gave his a little bit. We play Boston tonight, and then we've got Minnesota, and then next Monday, finish off the month with Buffalo. Because I said we're going to do the week, Jay, that means you also got to give me the following Thursday, Washington, and okay. the Islanders on Saturday.
Let's go game by game, because it's just the two of us. We can
do this. So Boston tonight.
Jeremy Swayman is starting. He's played two games this year. Allmark has primarily led the Boston group, but Marchand is back. And you know, he like it's the first game. Like, he's going to be such a dick tonight, which I love seeing, not against our team. Tonight's a 50-50 ball. I mean, okay. I probably will lean Boston just because Brad Marchand will be a game changer. They still don't have Charlie McAvoy, so I'll go Boston tonight.
You know, I'm going to go Boston too for no other reason than they're 6-1. That record has to stand for what it is at this particular moment. Like you said, Marchand being back, he's going to annoy some people. I'm hoping that Mo Sider will pick him up and spank him.
Oh, I'd pay to watch that.
Yeah, but we'll see what happens there. So give me Boston. Wings get another L in the column. Followed by Minnesota 2 days later, Jay.
That's a win at home. And even Fleury came out recently and said, "I'm bad. You should boo me." He got booed in Minnesota, yeah. And he's like, "You should boo me." The boos will continue from Minnesota to where we're at. But give me a win, 1-1.
Yeah, I say win as well. It's a bad hockey team. It really is a bad hockey team. I want to be supportive. It's like, no, I don't want you to say you're bad, but you're bad. You're just a bad hockey team. So yeah, I got 1-1 as well. Following Monday, they take on Buffalo in Buffalo.
I mean, I'm going to go win, but like, I have a lot of respect for Tage Thompson. I think he's an excellent hockey player for that club. They obviously have shed themselves of Eichel and have moved on, but it's still Buffalo. Like, these aren't your Hasek days. These aren't red, black, and white jerseys. These are whatever colors you have, blue, gold, and whatever. Yeah. White. Give me Buffalo 2-1 so far.
You want Buffalo to lose?
Oh, I'm sorry. No, give me the Wings. Buffalo loses.
2-1 as well. I agree. This, as much as you want to believe this is a hockey town, they can do it. This is just not this is another hockey team that 4-2. They're still kind of young. They're still trying to figure some things out. So give me Wings 2-1. Like I said, week from today, we take on the Capitals at home. Ovechkin chasing Wayne Gretzky, and oh boy, do I hope it happens, but we still have a ways to go with that. So Washington Capitals at home, Jay.
Typically, Ovi takes the season lightly in the beginning of the year, and he's already in his office. You see the clips. He's top of the circle, taking the one-timers on the power play. So they come back home. They're probably exhausted. This might be a spot where Washington prevails. I mean, they're Tom Wilson, John Carlson. I mean, Oshie is kind of still Oshie. Backstrom is kind of still Backstrom. Ovi is him and his son are going to own this league for many, many generations to watch. So give me Washington 2-2.
Okay. Yeah. I'm going to go different. I'm going to say 3-1. Ooh. I'm going to say, look, Ovi's great. And I think Ovi gets his, because let's be honest, you can't do what this man has done in his career and say that he doesn't do it. It's like saying, you know, it's like saying Miggy in his prime doesn't get a dinger if you throw it right down the middle. You know, it's like saying that Barry Sanders doesn't run for a 30-yard touchdown if three people miss. It's just some of these things are just meant to happen, and they will happen. Ovi getting his one-timer, if it's set up correctly, which it will be set up correctly, it's unstoppable. You can't you can name the goalie. Pick the goalie. He's not stopping it. That's just what it is. So, but that's one goal. Ovi's got to do it a couple times if the offense for the Wings can fire. So I say 3-1. It's at home. Little Caesars is going to – I really do believe, after seeing these last couple games, one, I want to get down there and see it myself.
100%.
Little Caesars looks like it has the potential to be a real home advantage for this team if they get the fans right. So I say 3-1. I'm going to be confident. And then lastly, next Saturday, your dirty, dirty New York Islanders.
If they're rocking the fisherman jerseys, Islanders win. If they're not, I imagine they're not going to rock fishermen on the road. That'd be stupid. But Anders Lee and Matthew Barzell and Ilya Sorkin. I think Sorkin is still there.
Yes.
Sorkin's a great goalie, but like
Sorkin and Varlamov.
I don't know what to make of the Islanders anymore.
They're Barry a question mark to me. Yeah.
The Barry Trotz slow defensive, like puck possession. Like, it's boring. It's not what hockey is right now. So I'm going to give us a dub.
Okay.
I'll take the win. And we're 3-2. And if we're winning 3 out of every 5 games, going to the playoffs, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have the same record as you. I think 3-2. I think we lose to the Islanders. I think you're talking about, you know, literally five games in eight days. That's just asking. Or 9 days. That's a lot. It's a lot of travel. It's a lot of moving around. So I think that's the weird thing. I think they get the win against the team you may not expect, but I think they get the loss against the team that you would expect them to get the win on. Islanders are 3-4 on the year, so they're kind of a middle of the road team, kind of like what they should be. And like you said, like this Trots team, literally just kind of trotsing along, is not enjoying. But I have to add, like. So that's what our predictions, 3-2 both ways. We both agree with that. Maybe the wins aren't in the same spot they are. But if you're Barry Trotz and if you're a fan on the outside looking in, do you just look at this and go, what were you thinking? You won a cup and then immediately left for a weird ass reason. Like, you have to kind of wonder, what were you thinking?
Maybe he was a goalie in his past life, because goalies are just weird ass people. Like, yeah, I don't know how you, I mean, I don't know, family, money, personal interest, another challenge. You know, when you do a puzzle and you spend days and days and days working on a big ass puzzle, just throw it on the floor and put another one down. Like, some people want the challenge, and he picked a good one. I mean, they were great. I think they had a good playoff run a year or two ago, but like, still the Islanders.
I get some people are builders. Some people really do like the challenge of building it. Once they get it to where it want, like where you want it to be, like kind of almost like people that remodel cars. Like, you love your cars, but some people just more enjoy bringing it back to what it needs to be. And then they're ready to get rid of it. They want the next one. And maybe that's what he is. But to me, you just won a cup. You literally have what everybody in the league wants in the way of job security. You did the one thing that buys you an extension. And it buys you an extension where they almost hand you the check and say, here's the highest number you can go. Please don't go above it. Fill out the check. And it just, to me, seemed like they probably came along that way and did that for him. And he was like, no, this is too good. I need to mess with shit. So, and that's a weird thing. It's just a weird thing to me.
Yeah. Who knows, man? I don't know. I don't get it either. And I don't care for their style of hockey. It's not fast enough for me, but it works.
And again, you're talking to a guy who, I get the tinkerer side of it. That's like, if you could see the other side of the screen right now, I have NBA 2K up. I just started a season, and my first thing to do is blow up the roster. I trade
so every time I talk, this is what you're doing, is managing your team.
I'm changing players on my team, but I trade everybody away and I just blow up the roster. So I get it. It is what it is. So yeah, Wings 3-2. We'll recap it following this week. Lastly, Jay, we're going to do this. We've been doing this whole show on the fly, but we're going to do this on the fly. Bet of the week for Justin Marcus.
You know, it's simple. We're going to keep it real simple, because if I pull up the stats here, which this is awesome, I'm prepared. I'm 6-6. You're 6-6. Russ is 7-5. Somehow he snuck out one victory on us. We're just going to keep it home and keep it close. 22.5. I think you have to have a lot of balls to take the number. And I think you also have to have a lot of balls, assuming that the state's going to score enough points to cover, to stay within that margin. So I honestly, right now, I still don't know which way I'm going to go. Do you think your prediction is that it's going to be more? So you think Michigan's going to cover the 22.5?
I will take the 22.5. Yeah. I believe they'll cover. So.
All right. I'll take the points, because I think that it will be closer than that, just because if there's a time for a game to be fucky, it's this weekend.
It has the potential. I will agree with you on that. It has the potential to be one of those weeks where it's like, how did we get here? Why is this happening? So I will agree with you on that. I'm going to take the points. I'm going to give the points. I think 22.5, they'll cover that. No problem.
Perfect. So we're not going to take a Russ bet. So one of us will at least be matched with him.
Yeah, that's fair.
So this bet is for a co-lead of our betting addictions.
Hey, attendance is mandatory to bet. That's a rule.
The best ability is
availability. Absolutely. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us here on Armchair Sports Talk. Like we said, lots to talk. We got Miami this week. We've got Michigan State coming up. Red Wings play tonight, and they got a couple games coming up. We didn't even get to Pistons, Jay. They're fun to watch, but like I said, I still need a little more time to figure out who goes where. It's a lot of moving parts. So we'll see what happens. But as always, my thanks to Sergeant Salty Justin Marcus.
Hey, I am barely here. I'm clearing my throat every 5 seconds, so my ability is very scarce. I did not prep a damn thing. but I'm here. I tried. So,
hey, like we said, best ability is availability.
Hey, just repeat after me. Go green.
Go blue. Go blue. And I'm Eric Dorsch. That's One Small Step for Us, One Giant Leap Back in Detroit Sports Broadcasting.
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. At no point in your rambling, incoherent response were you even close to anything that could be considered a rational thought. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. May God have mercy on your soul.